Good afternoon. I've got some great news for you. After an hour and a half, this is not a Palmer Amaranth presentation. Okay. And it's also interesting, I guess I've been a part of the Beltwide now for 17 years. I remember 17 years ago, it was Wayne Keeling that talked about tillage, and he talked about using terminated crops, and there was some of the other regions that were more focused on some of the other kind of technologies and other weeds, not so much Palmer Amaranth. But this presentation, unfortunately, coming out of Texas, and not to disagree with what Wayne was saying, we do not have a Palmer Amaranth resistant problem on the High Plains that we know of, but within the state, we believe this is the first reported case of a plant kin to Palmer Amaranth that now we're seeing is resistant to glyphosate. I do want to acknowledge the person mainly responsible for this research, Dr. Ginger Light. Also acknowledge some of the other colleagues, Mead Muhammad, Mike Chandler, and Robert Wright. So in 2008, if you look at the major crops that have the glyphosate resistance gene, this would be soybeans, corn, and cotton. We're at about 150 million acres. If we look at cotton itself, we were at about 7.5 million acres that contain this new technology. Since the technology was introduced, if you look at the trend of herbicide use, most herbicide use has declined, Dyrex has increased a little bit, and certainly glyphosate has increased, and roughly it's been about a tenfold amount during that period of time. Of course, when you start applying and relying on an individual herbicide to control your weeds, a couple of things are going to happen. You're going to start to see a shift in the type of weeds that are now problematic. That has nothing to do with resistance, but also there's a good possibility of resistance being developed. If you look at the U.S. right now, there are 9 different species that have now been confirmed to be resistant to glyphosate. If you look worldwide, you can add 7 different weeds to that list for a total of 16. Glyphosate-resistant common water hemp has been confirmed in several states, Minnesota, Missouri, Illinois, and Kansas. And recently, within the past few years, there have been some reported cases in South Texas where water hemp was not being controlled as effectively with glyphosate as what they had seen in the past. So that really leads us to the objectives of this research is what's going on with the common water hemp biotypes that are being found in South Texas. What we would like to do is to determine the level of glyphosate resistance in a couple of different populations, and then really in somewhat preliminary start to evaluate control strategies looking at post-emergent herbicides that could be used to control these potential glyphosate-resistant common water hemp populations. So in this particular presentation, we're going to focus on some supposed glyphosate-resistant lines that came out of a county in South Texas. This is Wharton County. Going to focus on 2 different lines, 2 out of 32 that were initially investigated in 2006, and these were plants that had survived a single application of a Roundup Weathermax at 44 ounces. A couple of years later at a separate location but in the same county, a couple of other lines, these are 2 of 5, but just 2 will be reporting today, from 2008, some plants that had survived sequential applications of glyphosate, 30 fluid ounces, followed by 22, followed by 22. Now, in this particular study, we also looked at some uncultivated populations of common water hemp, and we're using those as some susceptible lines that were found in that same county. We also introduced some confirmed common water hemp lines, the confirmed lines from Missouri, and a confirmed susceptible population from Illinois for comparison purposes. So just a little bit of methodology. Seed was initially put into some flats. When these seedlings approached 2 inches in size, they were transported or transplanted into some larger pots. We had 4 replications in this particular test. This was a completely randomized design, and this particular test was performed in greenhouses at 2 different locations, one on the High Plains of Texas and one at College Station. Now, glyphosate was applied to these transplanted biotypes when these plants were approximately 3 to 5 inches tall. As far as the spray tip, we used a Turbo T 110015 flat fan. We used a carrier volume of 12.5 gallons using a pressure of 28 pounds. We used an ultra formulation of glyphosate, but one that did not contain the surfactant, so when we increased the rates, we were not overly applying the surfactant, so a separate non-ionic surfactant was applied at 0.25% by volume. The glyphosate rates that we used differed when we looked at the supposed resistant populations compared to what we thought were the susceptible ones. If we consider 22 ounces as the X rate, the rates that were used on the susceptible populations were 1/32nd of that rate, 1/16, 1/8, 1/4, 1/2, 1, and 2x. Again, of the 22 ounces, the resistant populations received 0, 1/2, 1, 2, 4, 8, 6, 8, 12, and 16x of those 22 fluid ounces. So applications were made, plants were evaluated 28 days after application, and the first thing that we recorded were the number of surviving plants. And a surviving plant was characterized by a plant that still had some green tissue, green leaves, a green meristematic tissue, any type of green tissue present 28 days after application. We consider that a surviving plant. At that particular time, all surviving plants were pooled, so we looked at a pooled amount of dry matter for determination of our GR50. The SAS analysis that we used was the Probit analysis using 95% confidence interval. What we were after was the LD50 value. First of all, LD standing for lethal dose. So we were after the glyphosate dose, which provided 50% death of the plants that we were looking at. We were also interested in determining the GR50 value, or the dose that was required to reduce plant growth by 50%. Our second objective, as I mentioned before, somewhat preliminary, but is just to get a handle on other types of chemistries that may do a pretty good job of controlling common water hemp when applied post-emergence. And those products that we used were Staple at 1.5 ounces, Pursuit at 4 ounces, Permit, Reflex, Atrex, MSMA, Ignite, and Direx. And I should just point out at this particular time, again, trying to go back to some of the comments Dr. Keeling mentioned earlier, I think a lot of our success so far on the High Plains and just in Texas in general is using pre-plant incorporated and pre-emergent herbicides, but in this particular case, the emphasis was solely on post-emergent herbicides. Application conditions were similar weed sizes, same type of stationary sprayer was used, 12.5 gallons of carrier volume, 28 pounds of pressure. Observations were made on these particular weeds with all of these herbicides at 28 days after the treatment. The analysis was PROC-GLM using Fisher's protected LSD, p-value of 0.05. So this is the first graph. This is looking at the lethal dose information, and in case you're not familiar with some of these analyses, again, what we're after here is the rate that was used that provided that LD50 or lethal dose by 50%. What rate killed 50% of the plants? If we look at these different types of biotypes, the ones here on the far left would be those that were most susceptible to the herbicide. And of course, that was our Texas susceptible population and the population that came from Illinois. As we move a little bit to the right, you'll start to see a little bit more resistance. These were some of the populations that were identified in 2006. And as we move even further to the right, we start to look at that Missouri population and those two biotypes that were collected in 2008. If you look at the difference in the amount of herbicide from the far left to the far right, we're looking at a 60-fold increase in the amount of herbicide that was required that provided that LD50 value for the biotypes that were collected in 2008. These are the results from the GR50, and these lines are a little bit more closely coupled together, but I think you see similar relationships. On the far left, it required a lot less of the herbicide dose to provide a 50% reduction in growth, and as we move to the right, the populations that were collected in 2008 required quite a bit more herbicide to provide that GR50 value. So from those two line figures, the data is shown in this particular table right here, which may be a little bit easier to see. On the LD50 side, the rate was roughly that 1x rate of glyphosate for the Illinois population, 1.6x for the Texas susceptible, and you need to go anywhere to about 3 to 4-fold that for the populations that were collected in 2006, and anywhere from 30 to 60 fold for the populations that were collected in 2008. And again, similar observations were made with the GR50. Quite a bit more herbicide dose was required to provide that GR50 value, mainly on those populations that were collected in 2008. And if some of those numbers weren't convincing, hopefully a few pictures showing these plants. This figure right here is that line 6C, which was collected in 2008. We're looking at a 0X all the way up to a 16X. The higher the amount of herbicide, the less biomass that we did see. All of these plants did survive, and all of these plants did set seed. If we look at line 19, which was collected in 2006, we still had plants surviving the 2X rate, but anything higher than that did a pretty good job of causing death to this particular biotype. This figure right here shows the 16X rate of glyphosate applied to the different putative glyphosate-resistant lines that were collected, along with the Missouri line. The Missouri line, the two lines that were collected in 2006, complete death, but we still had plants surviving the 16X rate, those plants that were identified in 2008. So again, our second objective is just to start to get a handle on different chemistries that may be used post-emergence to control these particular common water hemp biotypes. This table right here was taken from some work that was done in College Station. I think I can summarize fairly quickly and say that Ignite herbicide, shown right here, provided the best control of all of these lines. And Reflex was the other herbicide that also appeared to be fairly successful initially at a chemistry that perhaps could be used if these particular biotypes were a problem in any fields that you work with. Results were slightly different. Same lines, same chemistries, different environment on the high plains, and probably the Ignite herbicide of all of the lines was most successful, but if you look at these putative glyphosate resistant lines, Ignite was more effective on two of the lines and not all four of the lines that were collected. So certainly more work needs to be done in this particular area as far as strategies that would be used to control these particular biotypes. So in conclusion, I think I can stand before you and somewhat comfortably say that we believe this is the first reported case of glyphosate-resistant common water hemp in the state. Thankfully, I can say that the county that these populations were found in is in South Texas and not on the High Plains. In general, the populations that were collected in 2006 had a lower level of resistance to glyphosate, and even possibly some resistance to the ALS chemistries as well. And I didn't really spend any time looking at that, but I do want to mention that. And the populations from 2008 appear to have a much more higher level of resistance to the glyphosate. As far as control strategies, of course, this needs to be tailored towards the production practices that the grower currently has. I think you've seen some pretty good information already about the use of cover crops and tillage and pre-emergent herbicides, and hopefully those similar practices would be used for this particular weed species. But right now, I would add in there the most effective post-emergent herbicides likely is the Ignite and the Reflex and the staple herbicide as well. As far as management strategies, I think you've heard quite a bit of information at this particular meeting, things that need to be done managing resistant weeds in general. A lot of times we think about rotating crops, but now because we can rotate the same glyphosate-resistant crop, we certainly need to be looking a little bit deeper and considering rotating herbicide modes of action. Again, we've had some discussion on mechanical control. We've had some discussion on a variety of pre-emergent herbicides that are still available for use in cotton. And then Dr. Keeling mentioned some of the current technologies, some of them that will be available as early as 2011 with a Glytol Liberty Link stack, and then even further beyond with the dicamba and the 2,4-D tolerances as well. As far as this research goes, one of the future research needs is to determine the specific mechanism behind the resistance in these common water hemp lines. And certainly one of the things that we will look for is just the simple overproduction of the target site EPSP synthase, because that appears to be one of the likely causes of resistance in the Palmer amaranth. So if that looks like my time is up, but if there's a question or two, I'd be happy to entertain that at this time.
Any questions?
Certainly couldn't have been that clear. All right, thank you.
Thank you.